This week, we're talking about how to create risk and consequence in your D&D games beyond death. And I welcome back Joe for one more week. Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common, brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon, who are your one-stop shop for all things D&D. Now, not only can you get beautifully crafted metal dice and resin sets too, but you can now pre-order Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft and get the other books you might not have in your collection with 10% off your basket if you use the code WESPEAKCOMMON on checkout. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe, that's D-S-C-R-Y-B. Describe is the place to go if, as a DM, you're great at building encounters and doing all mechanics, but not so good at writing those box texts. Describe does it all for you. They have talented creative writers who fill out hundreds and thousands of box text scenarios that you can use in your home games. There's a load of free ones you can go and have a little peruse through. And if you want access to over 1,500 scenes and growing of places, monsters and spells, you can grab a subscription using the code COMMON for 10% off. That's Describe, D-S-C-R-Y-B.com. And of course, big old shout out to the Patreons who are forever supporting the show directly. If you want to get involved with that, you can. There's links in the description, as always. And today, for an episode of Tinkerer's Toolbox, we are welcoming back again, because I've got to get every drop of blood out of the stone, Joe. Joseph Dixon, hello.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, yeah, mate. Very well. Very well. Glad to be back.
I've got to make the use of you being here. So, you know, two episodes makes sense, doesn't it?
This is it, mate. This is the last one, then I'm definitely gone.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to go back to living your life and doing things. But yeah, we'll make the most out of this one. We've got a session tomorrow, haven't we? We're going to play D&D together as well. Not tomorrow, Saturday.
Yes.
Thursday today.
Yeah. Yes, you just confused me as to time. Sorry. And space and how that all works. Yes, we do. It's going to be very fun. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one, revisiting a hibernating campaign. But
well, I mean, this will be interesting because, like I said, I don't remember too much about the previous campaign / like last session that we did. Mm. Mm. But I think that it's going to be pretty good, from what you've told me. It sounds like you put in a lot of work, so I appreciate that a lot. Mm. And I'm just happy to be playing Galadian. He's always been my favourite. This is why I'll never play another paladin until he's done, because why would I when he's the best? Anything else would just feel subpar. So, yes, very much looking forward to it. Getting back in the old steel boots, so to speak.
It's funny you say that as well, because I've realised I'm very much the same. Like, I've got Orlo on the go right now, and if I play another wizard, it feels weird. So I have to play classes that I'm not already running in ongoing campaigns. Like, my warlock in Descent, like, I don't want to play another warlock, because that would just be, dirty.
Hmm.
You know? It's weird.
Yeah. I suppose if you can make them different enough, like, I would certainly play multiple fighters, because I think they're more of a blank slate from which you can sort of paint your own picture on, and the mechanics lend themselves towards a variety of playstyles anyway, because I think that especially the subclasses now for fire are very diverse, especially from Tasha's. I was looking, I think I've underestimated the Rune Knight a little bit. I was looking at it and I was like, actually, this looks very, very good. I didn't realise that one of the first abilities you get, because I didn't read it properly, was basically, I read it as like, you take some damage or whatever, you can redirect that once and whatnot, but which I is what it does, but I didn't think about the consequences of that. And it's not just like when you take damage, it's when anyone within a certain range takes damage and you can direct it at anyone else with no saving throw. They just have to use the same roll. And so if one of your party members gets crit for massive damage, you can just put that on another enemy just for free. just I mean, it's not free. There's limited use to it, but essentially for free. That's like pretty crazy when you think about it. You could have some massive damaging attack from some Death Knight or something, some big smiting crit, and then you can just reverse that. It's a very fun... You've activated my truck card, Uno Reverso.
So, it literally is that, isn't it?
And I don't even know how it works thematically with a Rune Knight, but I don't really care. It's just quite good.
I really enjoy the Rune Knight. I've got one... I'm playing a Rune Knight and I play my post-game, and then I've got one... James is playing a Rune Knight in TOA, and it's a lot of fun watching him use his abilities. He's got a little like set that he uses the fire rune quite a lot, and it is a fun little thing. And when you combine so I'm combining the heavy arms guide that you can get off DM's Guild that has the weapon adjusting and the runic stones that you can add to weapons, and when you add that in, and the fact that James sort of said, oh, I want to be a rune knight but I also want to be a dwarf, can I like learn? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. It suddenly becomes a very full-fledged, like full arcing story for a character who basically learns this special type of magic. So it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed that.
Nice. Yeah, they look great, to be fair. I was almost going to play one for this new one shot that's on the horizon. I mean, I say on the horizon, it's not happening till the end of the year, but I was going to play that. And then I realized, no, actually, I'll play an illusion wizard because we're going to be level 15, which means they become horribly broken. And I had to, I literally spent like 2 hours Googling around because illusion is somewhat up to DM interpretation anyway. It's a bit loose on the rules. It's kind of like stealth in that way for 5e. Yeah. So I was like, okay, I want to see some other people's interpretations, because am I reading into this the wrong way? Does it sound better than it actually is? And the answer is no, Ben. It just is that good.
Yeah, it's just a really good class at high levels, yeah.
So just to paint the picture on this, at high levels, you can cast, Mirage Arcane or something like that. I can't remember the spells. The spell's name. And it's basically a 1 mile square illusion. And it has a degree of realism to it anyway. So, for instance, you could make sharp precipices into rolling hills, for instance, right? So you could essentially walk off the cliff and be fine because you're walking down an illusionary rolling hill. You could turn a lake into a meadow and walk across it. By extension, you could make a land bridge across the ocean if you wanted and just walk across. That's the sort of magic. Now, how does that interact with waves and stuff? Again, I'm not really sure because it doesn't specify. I guess that'd be up to the DM. But by the rules of the spell, you can do it. And then you combine this with the illusionist's ability to have malleable illusions, which means I believe it's a... So a bonus action or an action, can't remember, but you can change the illusion at will. And so with Mirage Arcane, you can like manifest buildings and stuff in it anyway. So all of a sudden you need somewhere to stay within the realms of this illusion. Okay, I manifest a small castle right in front of me. And then you can also make that. Now, if your DM's like, okay, well, I don't know how real this illusion is, blah, blah, blah. Well, it doesn't matter. Because an illusion is, you can make any illusion real for a minute anyway. So I need to walk across this chasm, boom, bridge, it's there, it's real now. Enemies are coming across this bridge at me, it's no longer real.
As long as you can get across it in a minute.
And it's just crazy, like, that you can literally do anything. So I was looking at some examples online of stuff people have done. So even with, like, major image... People have cast Major Image, turned it, because you can move Major Image each turn. Mm-hmm. If you cast it at 6th level, it's non-concentration as well. So people just have this Major Image move with them. They just use their action every turn, like wear it like a scarf or something, right?
Yeah.
And just have it go around with them. And then when they need it in battle, all of a sudden it's, okay, it's now an 4 adamantine shells that I just put over the enemies. And then I use my bonus action to make it real. I've just won the combat. What are they going to do? They're going to chip away through 400 HP of adamantine to get to me? I don't think so. And that's free. I haven't even expended a spell slot, because the beauty of it is Mage Image lasts for 24 hours or something when you cast it at 6th level. Once they're all dead, I just turn the illusion back into a scarf, Ben, and it comes with me. Just forever.
I hate this so much. How do you combat that as a DM?
I have no idea. I mean, presumably lots of counter spells, anti-magic fields, that sort of thing, I guess.
Yeah.
But then if you do that too much, it kind of just feels like you're targeting the wizard.
Then it's cheesy. Yeah.
But then maybe you need to target the wizard. Maybe the whole world knows about the wizard at this point.
To be fair, I very much buy into the old AD&D second edition stuff of wizards being like feared, because they are, they mess with the fabric of reality, right? People are scared. When you see a wizard, you act as if he's pointing a gun at you and he lifts his fingers, right? And I love that kind of dynamic. And I think that doesn't really exist in 5e. So if you had a wizard who was walking around with a scarf, who could just turn it into anything, like, I would just run. I would just be so fearful of this guy.
I mean, but like I say, it's so up to DM interpretation, because I just Googled 5e Mirage Arcane, and the very first post that comes up is from Reddit, and it's like, Mirage Arcane, how do you run it?
Yeah, am I being an arsehole?
No one actually knows how to run it, and it's ridiculous. It literally is ridiculous. And as a illusion wizard, because you can change the sort of the fabric of the spell, you can bring it with you. So once you get to the edge of the illusion's terrain, that now becomes the center of the illusion's terrain, because you've just moved it with your malleable illusions ability. So you don't even need to cast it again. You just keep bringing it with you. And its range is sight as well. So you could build like a large tower in this Mirage Arcane, which can be seen from miles around. Then whenever you need it, you just look at it and bring it to you.
Yeah.
It's just so good, Ben. Just so good. So I'm looking forward to playing that and seeing how broken it is. Again, it's a little bit confusing, because there's stuff like with malleable illusions and stuff, you can't, there are limitations in that, say, you can't damage an enemy with it, right? But I'm like, okay, so how does that work? And it has to be like an inanimate object, so it can't be alive. You can't create a creature. But I'm like, okay, so what if I create a bridge and they walk across it, and then I remove the bridge and they fall?
Well, then the item's not damaging them.
That's it. Is it just gravity that's damaging them at that point? I guess it depends on your DM how they would rule it, I guess. So it's pretty, yeah, it's a fun one. I'd be interested to hear how other DMs would rule on this, because it is kind of somewhat brave. I don't know how I would DM it, because what do you do at this point when a player's got this ability?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think it's gonna, I don't know, I feel like it's gonna depend on the player and the game, because I feel like it can be very situational, in the sense that not everyone has the imagination to come up with the perfect thing they need. And if they come up with something that's not quite perfect, then you can probably find a way to poke a hole in it and it not quite work. But yeah, the real limitation is that it can only last a minute. That stops a lot of things. But a minute in D&D is still a long time, especially if you're using it in combat.
Yeah, but then even like Mirage Arcane on its own, like, has these where it lasts for like 10 days.
Yeah.
It has a degree of reality to it anyway, because, and even if you can discern that the spell is an illusion,
yeah,
you can see through it, but all its effects still affect you. So if you're in some brambles and then you see through it and you're like, actually, no, this is just flat ground, you still get impeded by the brambles, even though you know they're not real anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do at that point?
So does that, if it has a, so here's the thing, right? So they're brambles, right? And you can see through them, but you're still getting caught in them. Well, if they've got an amount of realism, can you then burn them, or can you not burn them because they're magic? So then, can you
let me read you the spell, Ben?
And is such a long tangent. Okay, go on.
You give me your interpretation. So you make a terrain in an area up to 1 mile square, look, sound, smell, and even feel like some sort of other terrain. The terrain's general shape remains the same, However, open fields or a road could be made to resemble a swamp, hill, crevice, or some other difficult or impassable terrain. So you couldn't like plonk a mountain on flat ground, right?
No.
But you could make big hills and things like that.
Yeah.
A pond could be made to seem like a grassy meadow, a precipice like a gentle slope, or a rock-strewn gully like a wide and smooth road. Similarly, you could alter the appearance of structures or add them where none are present. The spell doesn't disguise, conceal, or add creatures. The illusion includes audible, visual, tactile, and olfactory elements, so it can turn clear ground into difficult terrain or vice versa,
right,
or otherwise impede movement through the area. So it is kind of real. Mm. Any piece of illusionary terrain, such as a rock or stick, that is removed from the spell's area disappears immediately. Creatures with true sight can see through the illusion to the terrain's true form. However, all of the elements of the illusion remain. So while the creature is aware of the illusion's presence, the creature can still physically interact with the illusion. So, I mean, it's kind of vague. And it says, okay, you can't change the terrain's general shape too much. But then it's saying you could add structures where there are none before. And there's no limit on the size of the structure here. What do I do if I add a massive castle? Is that changing the general shape?
See, I would say that's changing the general shape quite a bit, whereas adding one tower isn't going to be that drastic.
But then would you call structures, is a structure part of the terrain, or is terrain just talking about the actual topography and the relief?
Yeah,
it's I don't know. This is
This is a messy one. This is real messy one.
And then when you combine it with an illusion wizard, it's just poof,
ridiculous. Okay, I think I would say then, seeing as it's a magical, calling it illusion seems wrong because it's not an illusion; it's real. But yeah, I would say that because it's magically created, you'd have to use magic to get rid of it. So a dispel or countering it as it's cast or that kind of thing. If it's there, you can dispel it. If it's there, you can probably put an anti-magic field on it, which would cut it out, that kind of stuff. Mm. Anti-magic field would be interesting as well, because anti-magic field is not a mile long. So you can just cut out a section of it. That'd be interesting. I would then say that as for the structures, see, I think altering the terrain can either mean one of two things, right? It can either mean the way it looks or altering the terrain in sense of mechanics. So is it now difficult terrain, etc., etc.?
Yeah, which it does become.
So,
see, it says the terrain's general shape remains the same, however, but you can turn a pond into a grassy meadow. And then walk across the grassy meadow.
Yeah, so the grassy meadow would be like, the grassy meadow would have a dip in it, but it wouldn't be water.
Mm.
That's how I interpret that, because then you're not changing the shape. There's still the space where the pond would be, but there's no water there.
Yeah, it's interesting. And like they're saying, like a precipice into a gentle slope. Well, that's changing the terrain quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that
precipice is like 200 meters high, that's going to have to be a massive slope for it to be gentle. That's going to have to come out like 500 meters.
Yeah, that's quite grand.
So, I don't know.
Unless it's the type of like back and forth slope that goes down. It just goes straight down.
What do you mean? There's going to be a zigzag road cut into the slope.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
I don't know. It's magic. You can do what the fuck you want.
Well, this is it. Yeah. I mean, I don't know why people are sleeping on this spell so much, because it seems.
I think it's because the answer to it is so if you're using it and there's no wizard in the opposition, then it's grand. Use it, right? But as soon as there's a wizard who can dispel, as soon as they can see that it's illusion, they can cast dispel magic on it, and then they can get rid of it.
Because sage advice, people will ask this, and then Jeremy Crawford come back and said, you can climb an illusory tree formed by Mirage Arcane.
Mm.
So to me, that means everything is tactile.
Mm.
Not
to
just
me, that sounds like, okay, well then it's not actually an illusion. You are manifesting this thing into being.
Yeah. Very
cool.
Good.
Fun.
I mean, imagine casting this just over a dungeon, and then the fact that you can change it at any time. So basically anything you can see at this point, you can change at your will.
That blade, we'll just get rid of that. That blade trap's gone. That pitfall's now Phil. Yeah, that's dangerous. That's deadly.
Yeah, I don't know. I apologise how we got onto this topic, but...
No, it's an interesting one, though. It's an interesting one. And, like, you could just make a castle and be like, oh, I live here now. It's my house now. That's it. Well, you want to stay over? I'll just make a room there. There you go, done.
Well, people said, like, a villain could cast this on a town and just turn all the buildings into dilapidated structures.
Yeah.
And then the whole town is ruined.
Why is no one talking about this?
This is what I'm saying. Unless we're just giving it too much power for what it actually can do, but I'm reading it and it doesn't seem that way.
No, hearing what it says sounds like it should be able to do those things, but my brain is saying, well, why can it do those things then? Especially as a 6th level spell.
Well, it's a 7th level spell.
Okay.
And I guess it can be hard countered by things like...
Dispel, yeah.
Dispel, anti-magic field, that sort of thing. But it's a mile square, so you're not going to get rid of all of it.
No. Well, you would with Dispel. Dispel cancels out the entire magical effect. Because you are undoing the casting of the spell. Like, if you dispel a wall of force, you don't just make a hole in it, you get rid of the wall of force.
Oh, let's have a look.
Unless it's... Okay, so there are some... what's the word? I can't remember the word, but there are some things where it's not like that. So, like the wall of force that's over Kolak Towers, if you dispel that, it just makes an opening. So, but then that's not a spell that's been cast. That's a very particular ritual that's constantly putting out a magical effect.
Yeah, choose one creature, object, or magical effect within range. Any spell effect, level. So you'd have to roll.
Of course.
So you have to get a 17 on your.
What check. Happens if you upcast a spell? Do you still roll? You don't, do you?
No, yeah, you can. It's like a counter spell in that regard.
Right, okay.
So you have to spend a 7th level spell slot. Very interesting.
Very interesting indeed. Very, very interesting. Shall we talk about the thing we were going to talk about?
Might as well. While we're here.
So we've talked about... like upping things with risk and consequence in the past, but our conversations have typically been around, for example, you can up the risk in an encounter by adding an environmental factor. That's a favorite one, isn't it? So how do we add risk and consequence to our games other than just, well, you might die?
I suppose you could add politics to your game. That would risk you alienating your friends.
So politics I was thinking about this before we jumped on the call. And I feel like politics is the main one and you've gone for it straight away. And yeah.
I was kind of joking, but I'm interested to hear your take on this now.
Okay. So politics in D&D can be very tricky to do. It takes a lot of planning, a lot of thinking, a lot of character building and motivations and all that kind of stuff. Right. But if you do it right, it's very, very, gripping. It's very fun to play in. And yet you can add risk by having, say, a baron who, if you wrong or kill or something, you're not allowed in that area of the world. And if you ever enter that region, then you're being hunted. And like, there's a risk, right? So then you've got the whole fun thing of, oh, we upset the political balance of this region of wherever. And so if we go there, which we need to do because the MacGuffin's there, then we will get tracked down by guards and we'll be encountering things on the road. But I feel like that's kind of more story-wise and doesn't really affect the characters, because you either have that where they're like, oh, we'll get random encounters, and it's like, okay, well then the risk is just death again because you're gonna go and fight and you might die, or you have the political thing of, oh, you've destabilized a city and now it's in ruin and you can't buy magic items here anymore, and it's like, well, great, but that's very non-affected to the character, apart from the fact that, okay, we can't buy some magic items here, we'll just go somewhere else. Like, okay, the city's in rags, but that's, we don't care, we're gonna go somewhere else. Do you see what I mean? So I feel like politics is a way to add risk and consequence, but the consequences end up being either story based, which don't really affect the gameplay of the characters. They're great to have story-based consequences, obviously, because it's a storytelling game, but they don't actually affect the gameplay of the characters. Or they just end up being the same trivial stuff. Like, you can't get XYZ here, and you now can't, you know, you're now going to get hunted when you're here, which is just death again.
Well, yeah, it's an interesting topic because, I mean, stealing all my ideas like I normally do. I heard this off, I believe it was Adam Coble when he was DMing Real Role Play. He said that, well, his philosophy was sort of the most boring thing you can do to apply a character
is kill them.
Is kill them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think I agree with that for the most part. For that character itself, yes, killing them is the most boring thing because ultimately there is a certain degree of finality to that. It's over. They're not going to be having an impact on the world anymore, etc. I think, though, sometimes killing a character can be very interesting for the rest of the party, the people who carry on living, because they will have to deal with the repercussions of that, whether those be sort of logistical, financial, or more than likely emotional repercussions if they were quite close to that character. And that can have a knock-on effect for the rest of the game. Like in, for instance, Critical Role, they had a player character die fairly early on, but that hung over the rest of the adventure and certainly changed the dynamics of the group and of the story as a whole.
Yeah.
Now, that character's had sort of a bigger role than they perhaps normally would have, but their death has still been quite impactful. And so I don't think killing a character is necessarily the most boring thing you can do, because it can certainly have an effect. But I think there are definitely other ways you can add challenge, risk to a party without having it just be, you know, the threat is you lose all your hit points and you have to make a new character. So I think certain ways you could do this are by having ongoing consequences within the world itself. So I don't mean consequences physically to the character. You can do things like madness and, oh, you lose an arm or whatever. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those are things that certainly impede a character. But I think they have somewhat too negative connotations a lot of the time, where it just feels like a negative with no positive. Whereas I think if, say the players fail to do something, they fail to beat a boss and they have to run or whatever, that their reputation within the world could then potentially be damaged, right? But then new narrative threads could come from that. So let's say they fail to beat the boss or whatever, so now they're alienated by their people, their town, or whatnot, for failing to do this, because perhaps that big bad then goes on to do something sort of horrific, which they are then responsible for. I mean, that's a great hook if you have a paladin in the party, because that's
always thinking about your paladins.
That is right on their oaths, right? Yep. There. A vengeance paladin will lose his mind if that happens. And so that can be interesting, but also then that could invite other dubious players into the scenario. So other, say, ne'er-do-wells could come and approach the party and perhaps say, hey, I know you've had this hard time, let me offer you this, but actually there are more strings attached to this to help them beat the big bad or whatever. So things can flow in different directions like that from a defeat. And I think, if you just killed the players there, yeah, it would have been devastating and it would have certainly impacted them emotionally, but it might not have necessarily moved the story in such a way and has been as interesting as it could have been if they'd all lived. The only problem I find with killing characters is it's often a break in the pace of a story.
Yeah.
Because you're all wrapped up in a certain arc and potentially that character's own individual arc. And one, you don't get any satisfaction from that because it's cut short, which is the nature of D&D. That's how things happen. You don't get to fulfill all your arcs in a nice little bow. It's a little bit like Game of Thrones in that way, where sometimes characters just die. And that's just it. they don't get to have their journey. They just die. That's what happens. And I think that, Game of Thrones is a good example of this, because if you take a character like Theon, right? So they could have just killed, well, I say they, George R. Martin, could have just killed Theon after he went to Winterfell and took over the castle, right? But he didn't, and he had them go on this whole other journey, which was way more interesting and certainly a lot worse for the character than just dying. Like, a lot worse.
Yeah.
He had a really quite miserable time, I would say. But look how interesting that character turned out. And ironically, he sort of had the best arc in the whole show, out of probably anyone. That was probably more due to Dan and Dave fucking up everyone else's arcs. But
tell us how you really feel.
Well, God, don't get me started. But he had a great arc, and it was because he came to an opportunity many times where he could have died, but instead something much more interesting happened to him. So then he got captured, and then when he could have got killed again by his own people, he didn't. He just got left. And so again, this had so much psychological development and sort of physical development in the world, because he was still having impact on things around him. I think as well, you can do things like take stuff away from the players, but you need to give them an opportunity for something interesting to happen from that. So you could potentially say have all the players' wealth is stolen. So say the big bad defeats them, he's standing over this player character, and maybe he decides not to kill that character. Maybe he just decides to steal from them. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's a thief or someone who doesn't actually necessarily kill if he doesn't have to. Then the player character is probably going to be highly motivated to get revenge and get his stuff back. But maybe if it's a decent player and they've thought things through, they might not necessarily want to kill that big bad, because they might want to show them the same kindness.
Mm-hmm.
So you can develop a more interesting relationship with your villains by having them not necessarily always kill people. I mean, I've tried to do it in my game. I mean, there's been a lot of killing in my game. Let's not, you know, let's not get it twisted. But for instance, my big bad, Handan, he could have certainly tried to kill like the brothers' dads. Like, for people who don't know, in my game, Ben and James play these two brothers, and their dad was in some degree of mortal danger for some time from the big bad. It was all a bit political. No one was outwardly attacking anyone. We knew
stuff was going down.
There was moments where things could have changed. And ultimately, he could have killed him a few different times. And certainly, I think he 100% wanted to. The brothers would have struggled to stop it from happening, right? You may have been able to, but he had quite an overwhelming force. But you guys played it quite political. You did a lot of conniving. Some big illusionary double bodyguard swapping happened and whatnot, which sort of whisked him away out of the city and to safety. And that's actually developed a much more interesting outcome than if he just killed him, right? Because now the brothers have still got this grudge to beat the bad, because he's basically threatened to kill their father, but the father's still in it. So I still have that tool as like he could come back into the fray. He could still get killed. The threat is there. And like also, another example is the wizard of the party, Ayara, did a counter spell on Handan. Pretty sure it's the only person who has impeded his magic in any way. And it was a very critical moment. The players don't actually understand just how different the campaign would have been had that spell gone off.
We still don't really know what he was doing.
No.
She thought, this is bad, I'm going to stop it.
Things would have been drastically different, to say the least. And that's how I'd planned for things to be. So this was quite a big change for me as well. I wanted to kill Wesley in real life when this happened. but what was interesting is I thought, okay, Handan hates this person now.
Yeah.
Very much. Ruined his plans, ruined his holiday.
He'd take all that anger for Wesley and put it on.
I'm like, well, okay, what could I do? Well, he could just send his guards after. He knows she's in the city. He knows this. He could just send people to kill her. But instead, he didn't. He used his own networks and whatnot to find out what she wanted. And he was like, oh, she wants out of here. She wants to go home. I'm definitely not going to let that happen now. So now he's just torturing her because she has a way to get back, which was to maybe open up some sort of portal or something from sort of the Temple of Bjorn, which he went to.
Yeah.
And the head priest has the capability to do that. But he literally just said to her, I'm not allowed. I've been told to say no to you.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I think that was more interesting than just having guards come and try kill her.
Definitely. 100% agree. I think that the answer here is to think of something that is going to make their lives a little bit difficult. And that's kind of, I feel like we're told not to do that, right? We're told to like, oh, you shouldn't make it hard on the players all the time because that's not fun. But if you want a consequence, then you want something that's going to make it hard and not necessarily like, oh, the consequence is that your item is a cursed item. Oh, you didn't know, lol, now you can't roll higher than a 5. Like, no, I mean like give them something that they can roll with. So I think Wesley's character, whose name I've forgotten in your campaign, is a great example of that, because now he's been role-playing for what, 6 sessions about how she's saying, okay, I want to go home. I don't want to be here. You know, this trip has turned out very different to what I thought it was. I'll help you with this thing and then you're going to help me go. And we've said, yeah, absolutely. She's helped us. We've gone to help her and now she can't. So now he's got to role play his character, you know, going through that, like that realization of I was so close. I was so ready and now I'm not. And why am I not? Well, I kind of know. What can I do? What does this change? What are my options? And that's going to open up so many different routes for not only the character to go down, but the party and the story too. So I suppose in a way I want to not look at it as, okay, what consequences can I put in? But more of like, okay, what story beats can I put in? Because then that makes me think of it more in a term of what could I do now that would be a twist that they've caused? Make sense?
Yeah. Another great example of this in media, I would say, would be Gollum in The Hobbit.
Mm.
Because Bilbo could have killed him, but decided to not. And instead did the worst possible thing he could do, which was take the ring away from him. Mm. Now, people didn't really know it was going to have this drastic effect on the rest of the world.
But
Tolkien knew when he wrote it that that's literally the worst thing you could do to Gollum, because it would destroy his life, is to take the ring away from him. And so instead of killing him, he did that instead. And now, obviously, Gollum had a much more interesting arc than if he just died there and then.
Mm.
So I think that's a good example. Take things away from your players that they hold dear, with the opportunity to get them back, of course, and even better, but allow them to go on these arcs and these journeys and see where it leads them. I think that's certainly one of the more interesting things you can do. But like I say, you don't want to completely remove the threat of death and never have your big bads kill anyone. I mean, sometimes you just got to kill a motherfucker to set the scene. Right?
Yeah, literally. Literally.
You got to set the stakes. That's just the way it is.
You know what you can do is you can always add in a level of risk and consequence by, you know, if the player does something bad or ends up unconscious, you can bring that risk into the real world and just take away their beautiful Dice Dungeon dice. That's a really good way of being like, well, this is your consequence, my friend.
Yes, theft and repossession. I like that. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are the bailiff knocking on the door. You know, you should have used that fifth level spell and you didn't. Give me your nice Kirill the Golden. And if you want to do that, you might want to buy all of your players' dice to take back from them at some point first. Well, luckily, you can get 10% off your entire order with the code We Speak Common on Dice Dungeon. And of course, the best way to prepare for that evil maniacal speech as your NPC, you know, puts in the blade that makes them unconscious so you can steal those dice is to have it expertly written by creative writers. Head over to describe, DSCRYB.com, and have a look at some of the beautifully written exposition that you can use to deliver that in a very, very thought out and maniacal way. You can get 10% off a subscription with the code COMMON too. Okay, so I want to ask, are consequences and risk the same thing for you in games then?
Risk and consequence. I would say that risks are things that come from the players, not necessarily from the DM, because it's risk management, I think, is on the players themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's decisions they make. That's what makes the game interesting. If you're making constantly risk-free decisions all the time in game, then what's the point? There's no drama, there's no excitement there, there's no theatre to this. So I think risk ultimately comes from the players. Now, you can influence that because the players will often be making decisions on how much risk they want to take without all the information available to them. So they may inadvertently be making a much more risky decision than they know because there's information you've withheld from them, or they just haven't found that out, right? So there is a bit of back and forth on that. But I think ultimately, risk management is down to the players. It's up to them to decide what they want to do. And I think you can make that feel fair and rewarding by oftentimes giving them a lot of the information they need, right? And I'm not going to tell my players nothing about this passage they're going, or saying it's very safe, and then they walk down there and they bump into a dragon 10 levels higher than them. That's not fun. But if I had to explain to them that there is a dragon that lives down this passage somewhere, and you're very unlikely to be able to beat it in combat, well, maybe they decide to take the passage knowing the risk, but then they prepare for it, right? And they do certain things, or maybe they try and lure the dragon away or whatever, right? So I think that's interesting risk management. Consequence is something that ultimately the DM decides on. The players can be informed of what consequences will come to them for certain actions, such as the laws of the land are probably written down and the consequences are quite set in stone. You steal a certain amount of stuff, you get your hand chopped off or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a classic.
That's a known consequence. But I think ultimately a lot of the other consequences, which will stem from what is the big bad going to do, what are the aggressors in this situation, the antagonists, going to do, that's more up to the DM. And like I say, the players can become informed by learning about that character, understanding their motivations, their desires, their tendencies, so they can understand what sort of consequences they might invite by tangling with this person. But ultimately, it's more of a DM decision, I would say, as to what happens.
Yeah, I think you've kind of summed that up pretty perfectly, to be honest. But yeah, so risk is player derived and consequences DM derived, and a good mix of both is what's gonna make things feel natural. I think, you know, it's always good as a player when you make a calculated risk and it pays off. I, as a player, also really enjoy it when you make a calculated risk and it doesn't pay off, and then you're left with the consequence of that. And I think that, especially going forward, but I think that my thoughts have always been, well, if there's a consequence to a player's actions, if it's not been necessarily laid out for them beforehand, it shouldn't be clear until they discover it. And I think that adds a nice level of, it adds that level of the world breathing and being its own functioning organic thing, but I think it also adds a nice level of surprise later down the line. You know, if the players don't know that the consequence of their actions is that they're going to be arrested when they walk into the capital, and then 10 sessions later they say, oh, we're going to head back there, and they walk through the gate and instantly they're surrounded by, you know, the garrison guard, they're going to be confused, they're not going to understand what's going on, and then they get that moment of, oh shit, we did this to ourselves. And I think that's always much more dynamic and much more interesting as a player than just, okay, well, we now know we can never go back to that city, because then they're just never going to go back there.
Yeah, and I think, look, sometimes a surprise consequence is fine. It can spice up the game and give a little bit of diversity and flair to an otherwise perhaps predictable game and environment. But I think it's something you almost always want to give the opportunity to players to find things out and understand things. So maybe, yeah, they do go to the city and they're arrested and they don't have any idea why, but perhaps there was an opportunity for them to find out. And I like to inform my players through one way or another, in canon, not me just telling them as a DM, but
yeah,
if they've missed something, because I think it makes it almost even more interesting. So maybe they get arrested by the city and then they, as they're going through or whatever, they find some vague wanted poster which has a vague description of someone on it, which is them. And they actually read that wanted poster in the last town, but they didn't realize it was them because they didn't read the description thorough enough and think, hang on, this sounds like all of us. Maybe they just brushed it off because they were busy shopping or whatever. So you know,
it's always the way.
But then I think that becomes interesting. It's a bit of like a gotcha moment, but also it's interesting because then they're like, oh, whoa, that was us. We could have figured this out. We could have made a different decision, you know. But we've made our bed now, so let's get in it. And I think that it also solidifies the world as being more tangible and realistic. Because when you just throw things in for a surprise all the time, it can sometimes feel a little bit disjointed and like the DM is doing it by the seat of his pants.
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes, I mean, spoiler alert, I'm almost always doing it by the seat of my pants.
Yeah.
But if I can create the illusion that I'm not and it's all planned out, then that's quite effective, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think as well, another fun one is like if you don't want to, let's say you have that consequence in your game of they're going to get arrested if they go to the city, but you don't want to completely derail because of pacing or something. They know they've got to go there, but you don't want to just do that and throw the pacing of whatever arc you've built off the rails completely. A nice way is like, well, what if they're camping along the Royal Road for a night because they're, you know, 3 days away from their destination, and the patrolling garrison for that region comes by and they say, oh, where were you on the 5th of November at 3 p.m. like, that's going to be such a bizarre but very interesting encounter for them to have. That's not necessarily combat, could turn into one, and then they know the risks of, okay, well, what do we do if we kill a bunch of royal guard? Yeah, that's a very more kind of fun random encounter consequence that can come about of the same kind of problem. And then you're adding the extra risk and consequence of what their actions are based on what they then do. So that's a fun way of getting around that too. They don't have to be massive, you know, oh, well, now you can't ever go back here. They don't have to be that big. It could just be that they've broken a law and the city wants to capture them and find them, right? Then the consequence is, okay, well, technically the consequence is you're going to lose some gold, but you do it in a more fun, organic way with an encounter that adds the potential of escalating the consequence.
Mm. And I think as well, you can do things like use death, but not as a consequence for the character that's dying, but as a consequence for other characters. Like going back to Adam Coble's game when he used to do, I can't remember the name of it, but it was a D&D game he used to run where basically one character in there was a barbarian. He had really terrible stats and everything. He was a bit of a throwaway character, but he ended up lasting like 100 sessions. It was ridiculous. And his whole thing was that he was a slave, right? And at the start of the campaign, he still was a slave. He eventually sort of escaped his bondage and whatever. But Adam would always linger the threat of bondage and slavery over him at all times. I sort of knew that Adam was, unless by accident just an encounter goes wrong and he gets killed, right? Adam was never an out and out going to go and try and kill this character. He would always try and enslave him first, because that's way worse than just killing the character, and it had a much greater emotional effect. He also did something really interesting where in his world, reincarnation's a thing, right? And it was quite interesting because the more good karma you build up in one life means you reincarnate as something sort of quote unquote better in your next life. And you go on and on and on and on until you basically go to heaven. And so maybe you're a human one time and then you're a really good person and you become a Azamar the next time, but then you're really horrible and you come back as like a worm the next time, right?
That happened often to you. You come back as a worm.
Oh, all the time, mate. I'm slithering around right now as we speak. But
I can hear it.
Yeah, it's really hard to wear headphones, actually, currently. And he had this one character who was quite close, an NPC that was close to this barbarian, who then died. And he thought, well, what's the most interesting thing I can do here? Well, it's definitely not just to have this character die forever. So then way later in the campaign, where we do like a time jump of 10 years, he meets the reincarnated child version of that character.
Mm.
And then what does he do? He like completely ruins their life, gets them split up, and it has that child character go down like this mega dark path. And I'm like, wow, that's sadistic as fuck, but way more interesting than killing either of them.
Mm, yeah, definitely. And I think that's kind of the point, is take your consequence and make it something interesting that can develop, rather than just, well, you're dead now.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much you can do. There's so much you can do.
That sounds like such an open, like, here's how you do it, but that kind of is it. It's going to be dependent on your story that you're telling. But hopefully that's inspirational for the creative mind somewhere along the last hour that we've chatted. Joe, thank you for jumping back on these last 2 weeks. It's been really fun to go back to the roots and talk to you about D&D. I mean, it's fun to just talk to you about D&D anyway, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. I mean, I thought, like, you know, along these lines, I thought, what's the most interesting thing I could do? Could I just let this show wither and die without me? You know what I mean? Or do I come back and do something more interesting with it? You know what I mean?
So humble. You're so humble.
Well, what are you going to do?
Where would I be without you? That's the true message of this episode. Cool. Well, you go off and live your life for a bit, and next time you're back, I'll get you on again. I need a good boost to the old audience figures. Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome. Right. Anyway, if you want to get involved with the old podcast while Joe's gone, because he's pissing off now, then you can. WeSpeakCommon@hotmail.com is the email. Get in touch on there, or of course on Twitter, which is @WeSpeakCommon, and Instagram, which is the same. If you see us on Reddit, it's me. It's always me. And if you want to support the show directly, either share us with a bunch of people, that's very helpful, or head over to the Patreon and come and join us on the Discord server. Cool. Joe, thank you again. I cannot wait to play some D&D and to mess with Galahad emotionally on Saturday.
Well, I can't wait to have my life torn apart. Thank you.
See you later, dude.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening today. If you like the show, do us a favour. Leave us a like and review on your platform of choice. And share us with your friends. Send us to your fellow DMs and players so that we can build our community even more. It really helps to get us out in front of more eyes. If you want to support the show, you can by joining our Patreon. Links can be found in the show description and the episode descriptions on all platforms. The music in the podcast is Street Dancing by Timecrawler82. It's licensed under a Creative Commons license by NC. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.